G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 with Neil Johnson on Vision.
Our special presentation today, a preview of tomorrow's Victorian state election. And two more guest commentators joining us now. Lee Jones, who is Family First Party lead candidate for an upper house seat. He represents the southeastern metropolitan region. And Peter Stevens is Family Voice Australia Victorian State Director. Welcome to you, Lee.
Thank you, Neil. Pleasure to be here.
And welcome to you, Peter.
Good morning, Neil.
We've spoken a fair bit over our beginning of our commentary. Lee, get into the nitty-gritty with us here. Family First Party, there's been a revival. We've seen a strong showing back in the South Australian election. The focus is now on Victoria for the Victorian state election. You are the lead candidate for an upper house seat, the southeastern metropolitan region. One of the things that you've been very strong in your campaigning is around issues of biological truth. It's these issues of pro-life and the issue of abortion. How important is this for you and for listeners to our conversation today to be aware?
Thanks, Neil. Great question. One of the things that's become very clear to us as we've campaigned across the state is that Victorian households are largely unaware of some of the very radical laws that have been brought in by the current Dan Andrews government. So particularly laws that allow the transitioning of children from one gender to another, in some cases without the parents' knowledge or consent. The teaching of radical gender theory to children in schools, starting at kindergarten, is now standard across the state. And that teaches kids that they are not necessarily not necessarily a boy or a girl. No one can tell them what gender they are. They can pick their own gender. And we're very concerned that nothing in the mainstream parties talks about this sort of stuff. And critically, most recently, and perhaps even most egregiously, the introduction of the Change and Suppression Bill, which means that anyone that seeks to speak to a young person that is expressing gender confusion is not allowed to do, on the penalty of going to jail, anything other than affirm a likely transition of gender. So for a parent who has a child come home and say, I'm a boy, but I think I might be a girl. If you simply say, look, just wait and see, or if you try and counsel them to think that that's probably not true, then that does two things. That makes you a criminal in the eyes of the change in suppression law, and it can also make you have you defined as an abusive parent. So there's some really, really egregiously serious things that are going on in our state, and most people don't know about them.
Peter Stevens, you're lobbying, you're meeting people, you're pressing the flesh with politicians, with candidates. You've got your own following in Victoria, Family Voice Australia. These sorts of things that Lee is sharing, are you coming across this too? People are just unaware, or they're oblivious, they're ignorant to the fact that these things have engulfed Victoria.
I think they're becoming more aware very quickly, Neil. It's kind of ironic that here in Victoria, we are permitted by law to change our gender on our birth certificate once a year, and yet it's illegal to counsel somebody to pray for somebody when they're considering or even ask for help in not to change gender. And just going a little bit further with that one, I was with a beautiful Christian couple just the other day as part of my travels around Victoria, and an older couple, but they were saying that their 24-year-old granddaughter had her breasts removed in the endeavour to become what she believed was necessary to become a man. And I think it's just horrific what is being pushed. This gender theory and the law around suppression practices, Neil, is all intended to push Victorians towards gender confusion. There's no redress for people who want to actually get involved in advising on that issue.
Lee Jones, Family First Party in Victoria. It's part of what you do in Family First. You're not afraid to say the things that everyday Australians think, but no longer allowed to say in the state of Victoria. You must look and shake your head at the Labor government and at the Liberal opposition, because people are not necessarily reflecting what voters might be thinking or ordinary Christian people might be thinking about some of these issues. What are your thoughts here about the value of a Family First party, especially in an upper house after tomorrow's vote?
Well, Neil, Family First is a critical part of the mix in the upper house in the coming parliament. The challenge we have with the Liberals as an alternative government to the current Labor government is that Matthew Guy has come out and said that the Change and Suppression Bill is, quote, a good bill. And he's speaking about that as a bill before it passed into an act of parliament. And he's committed to not changing that in the upper house. So we see in the announcement of policies between Liberal and Labor on the social issues that regular folk care about, people of Christian faith, Muslim faith, and Jewish, and so on, but also people of just regular traditional values, the values that have upheld us as a society for 200 years. These things are being undermined, and the Liberals are not necessarily going to help us. So we need a strong voice in Parliament to be able to call these things out continuously and speak into our political, spiritual, and cultural state mindset, just to say these things are going on, to challenge them, to challenge the fact that they are wrong, that they are immoral, they are dangerous, and particularly that they are harmful. They're harmful to young people, they're harmful to the unborn, and they're harmful to the elderly.
Well, with the scenarios of the outcomes tomorrow, things don't look especially attractive for the Christian voter for what might happen in the lower house. So the upper house is the only bright light where the possibility is that Family First will win a seat or two, or that the resurgent Labor DLP with some Christian foundations there will hold a balance of power. This is almost like critical, isn't it? Peter Stevens, what are your thoughts about the upper house and the possibilities of a crossbench that might hold to some sort of values that might hold back the tide?
Well, Neil, I'm really encouraged because there are, as you've been made aware before, there are many Christians who are standing for upper house seats, and then Family First has a large number of Christian candidates for the upper house, but also there are other parties, the Nationals, the Liberals, DLP, who have really good, solid Christian people who've risen up to stand for these seats. And so I'm really expecting and hoping that many of those Christians will get a seat in our upper house. I really believe that God is doing a significant move of change in our upper house. And while there may be also a large number of our adversaries elected tomorrow, I'm really positive. Neil, you might, just to go back a fraction, you might be interested to know that we believe that in our current government, there are only two Christians, or two people that I would call committed Christians, out of 128 MPs. But there are possibly 20 Christians just aiming for the upper house tomorrow. So I'm actually really excited that there's going to be significant change.
Lee Jones, your name is going to be on that ballot for the upper house in the southeastern metropolitan region. There's been all sorts of controversy around how that ballot form can be easily manipulated with election whisperers. How are you saying to your potential voters that they should vote, above the line or below the line?
For people voting for Family First and supportive of Family First, I would simply say in the upper house, it is best to vote above the line for Family First. Our preference layout has been described by third parties as impeccable. And we have preferenced entirely and purely based on degrees of alignment in thinking and values. So we have deals with all the minor conservative and social values parties. So all our preferences will flow through those. We have preferenced in the upper house Liberal National ahead of Labour, and we've put the Greens pretty much down the bottom because of their social policies. So we would encourage people to vote one above the line for Family First. So one of the reasons we say that is that if people vote below the line, something like 25% of people who vote below the line have their preferences exhausted before they go anywhere useful. And so because the social conservative vote is so small, it's important that we harvest every single vote. Now, I know other organisations are saying vote below the line to maximise the effectiveness. The challenge is doing that well is complicated.
Peter Stevens, who is Family Voice Australia Victorian State Director, and Lee Jones, Family First Party lead candidate for the upper house in tomorrow's election. Gentlemen, let me just touch on some things here, and I'll come to you first, Peter Stevens. Issues around integrity. When voters are hearing of the IBAC investigations that are going on, and something like four of those around the Premier Dan Andrews, and even threats of IBAC investigations around Matthew Guy, what does it say about integrity across the board? Peter, your thoughts first?
Yes, you're right, Neil. I think four matters under investigation by IBAC. And I think Victorians are getting very weary of corruption in the state government, and also by Daniel Andrews' significant losses of memory on all of these subjects. And I think Ian Cook's campaign in Mulgrave, where he's campaigning on Cook being elected rather than Crook, I think is quite significant, and quite a rise of support for him in Mulgrave. So, yes, I think Victorians are actually a little bit over it. I think that we're getting very weary. Lockdowns, business closures, a lot of anxiety, skyrocketing energy prices and interest rates. And I think, Neil, a general fear that if we keep going in the same direction, we're all going to be suffering a lot more. So, yes, it's a drama.
Lee Jones, Family First candidate, southeastern metropolitan region. How much can Victorians take of a lack of integrity before they start to look at some alternatives? What are your thoughts around those IBAC investigations?
I think it's interesting if you compare what happens, say, in New South Wales, where a premier can lose a position based on a relationship, or a minister can lose a position on the basis of an undeclared bottle of wine. And yet down here, Dan Andrews can face multiple IBACs. And the way he seems to have the system wrapped up, no one seems to be able to talk about any of this. It's all away from the media. There seems to be a very different rule that applies in the two different jurisdictions. It seems to me that the general smell of corruption that's emerging now from Spring Street is such that people are beginning to wake up. And we're seeing that in a shift in the polling numbers, and we're seeing that particularly in a shift in people's personal views towards Dan Andrews. And in fact, we've seen a fair bit of media here describing Dan as increasingly toxic for the Labour Party. It would be a great result if we saw the removal of Dan from his seat in Mulgrave in this election. The Labour Party has a role to play in our society. All the major parties do, and the minor parties do as well. But the Labour Party is no longer, in my view, the Labour Party. It's the Dan Andrews Party. He has such a tight control over it, such a large degree of centralised authority, that really it's just a mob who are doing his personal bidding. We would love to see the end of that to really bring back good democracy into this state.
Peter Stevens, your thoughts on leadership and integrity and, you know, some of those nicknames, Dictator Dan, a little bit along the lines of what Lee Jones is sharing there. Sometimes yep. they're seen like a fun caricature, but this sort of issue around is the Premier, in fact, a tyrant? Some people are asking that. What are your thoughts, Peter?
Yes, I had a chat to my wife recently about this and about Dan's big government. In fact, he reportedly has a bigger team of advisers than the UK Prime Minister. And so my wife said, well, they can't be providing very good advice, which is quite funny. But there's a serious side to what's going on in Victoria. And I just want to mention, Neil, the economic situation here. We're looking at a $200 billion debt. But as Terry McCran reported this morning, with the Labor government wanting to take over SEC again, Terry McCran is saying that that could possibly double the state debt to $400 billion. So at the moment, every Victorian owes around about $30,000 because of our economic situation in Victoria, but that could rise to $60,000 per person. So it's looking like not only corruption in a lot of areas of government, but also economic failure.
Lee Jones, what are your thoughts around these big economic issues, the way that state debt has increased under Dan Andrews? What's the Family First Party position on how things have gone out of control there?
It comes down to two things. One is the amount of work that we are trying to do at the same time, and the other is the value of individual pieces done. So the suburban rail loop is a classic example of a massive white elephant. There's no serious economist that I've been able to read who supports that. The business case doesn't stack up. And recently, Dan Andrews, on that televised debate with Matthew Guy, made it clear he can't actually tell us what the cost will be at the end of the day, but it could well be over $100 billion for a rail line that goes about 20-something Ks. Those kind of projects become nonsensical. Part of the challenge of this is that the cost is high because Dan Andrews has tried to build so much so quickly. What that does is it stretches the limited capacity we have in terms of skills and workforce and capital to do that. And that, of course, creates internal competition within the state, which actually drives the prices up. And also, of course, there's Labor's just absolute dismal lack of ability to manage these things. We know a lot of people in the Labor Party now are just career politicians who have no experience managing anything. I mean, they haven't even managed a corner shop. We need people who've managed businesses, who've managed teams, who've managed major projects. We need people who know what they're doing in government. And this mob are not, they're hacks. They're party politicians. They've come out of uni with a degree in something or other. They've become a staffer for a politician. They crave a position in Parliament. They win one and they have no life or business or other experience to apply. We've got to change that in our Parliament.
When you're thinking of both sides and you're not favouring one side over another in some sense as the Family First Party lead candidate for that upper house seat, southeastern metropolitan region. When you're thinking of the economic management of the Labor Party under Dan Andrews, and you're thinking of what sort of policies are up against the Labor Party from the Liberal Matthew Guy, how are you describing both sides? Because from what I understand, under Matthew Guy, there's a even bigger promise for billions to be spent than under Labor. How do you make sense of making an assessment of both sides, Lee?
I think it comes down to a case by case basis. I think I'd like to see every major project referred to an independent infrastructure arbiter. Like all organisations or bodies, the state of Victoria has a certain capacity to invest at a certain rate. And what we should be doing when presented with a range of investment opportunities is going, in a fairly simple sense, through the business case process and saying, well, where is the highest value available? Now, we know that for any organisation of any substance that wants to do a thing or run a thing, that there are always more investment opportunities on the table than you can afford to do at once or have the capacity to do. So you have to make an informed choice about where the priorities lie. We do need to invest in our infrastructure. We do need to invest in our hospitals, our roads, railways, airports, and so on. But we need to do so in a principled way, which is based on reasonable assessed prioritizations, such that we are not trying to do too much at once, which just drives the price of those projects up and it just means that we end up doing more things which are less valuable. So we've got to prioritize them, we've got to do what's really, really important. The investment in the hospital infrastructure in particular requires a lot of careful thought. Simply throwing money at things doesn't always solve the problem. And we've seen that in education, where we've thrown record amounts of money at our education system nationally and at the state level, coupled with a huge decline in capability and the performance of our school kids. So there's a dual question. There's the question of prioritising what we need to do, making sure that it is that the business case for the investments that we're making at huge cost, with a huge potential impost on our children and even on our children's children, that these things are worthwhile doing. And they're not just showcases or flags for Dan Andrews to fly when he comes to be re-elected, saying, oh, look at all the things that we built, look at all the shiny things, which can become a distraction for the underlying social policies that he's bringing in as well.
Sometimes we separate an economic agenda for political parties with the social agenda of political parties. Throw you into the deep end here, Peter Stevens from Family Voice Australia. The connection between where people and parties stand so far as a social agenda goes, I wonder if there's a connection to things going out of control in an economic sense because of a bad social agenda. Does that affect bad economic policy, bad economic agendas? Any thoughts from you, Peter, around that?
Thanks, Neil. I did not mention before, but I think it's important that Victoria has a bigger debt than New South Wales, Queensland and Tasmania combined. And just mentioning the SEC again, it was the privatisation of the SEC by the Jeff Kennett government that actually got Victoria out of debt. And so it's quite frightening that Dan Andrews is considering or even mentioning the fact that he wants to purchase it back and run it by have government control there. But yes, it's important, I think, that we look at the history of the AOP. And just briefly, going back to the Second World War, there was a strong rise of communism because Australia was allied with communist Russia. And out of that rise of communism came strong communist influence in unions and in the AOP. And so, as you remember, Neil, the AOP split in 1955, and the DLP, or it was called then the AOP Anti-Communist, broke off from the AOP. So those two sides of government went forward. One was the communist side of the AOP, which is the one that still runs Victoria today. And then there was the anti-communist side of the AOP, which is now the DLP. And so the AOP has very strong communist or socialist roots. And so part of our socialist agenda is, one, to get rid of religion from society so that they can impose their own ideology. But also there's evidence that economically, communism or socialism is a disaster for countries like in Russia, where over the last century, more than 100 million people were killed by communism. And here we are, the same sort of thing happening in Victoria through abortion, euthanasia. So there is definitely a link, Neil, between the destruction of humanity and families and economic failure through the rise of socialism.
Lee Jones, I wonder if you've got anything to add to that, because as Christians, listening to our conversation today, thinking about how they'll vote for tomorrow's Victoria state election, thinking about the economics and, you know, isn't it more important to think about who's got the best economic policies? But what about this social agenda and how that affects the way a state runs? How do you describe connections between having a bad social agenda and how that might affect economics?
It's an interesting link to try and draw. I guess there's no point having a great economy if you are not permitted to be born to live to enjoy it. There's no point having a great economy if you're being locked up because you've tried to counsel your children against rushing into changing their gender. And there's no point having a great economy if you as a Christian school are no longer allowed to recruit people who identify with your ethos, and you're being forced by this this ideologically driven government to hire anyone and everyone who fronts up, even those who are ideologically opposed to who you are. So I won't comment on the link between bad policy and bad economics. I think a lot of that comes as through down to just the quality of people who are running government. I've already made comment about that, this current Labour government. But there is no point having a great economy if people are not free, or indeed, in some cases, not even alive to enjoy the fruits of it.
Let's come back to some life issues, because these are significant, especially for the voter who has the thought that, children, men, women, boys, girls, created in the image and likeness of God. That includes babies in the womb. When you've got the Victorian Liberal leader, Matthew Guy, who has said that Liberal candidate, Renee Heath, who believes that abortion is wrong, will be banned from sitting in the party room if elected. And of course, there was the issues around Bernie Finn and his expulsion from the party room, the Liberal Party. And of course, he is standing for the DLP. Thoughts here around life issues and just how important they are to get a focus on with the Victorian state election. If I come to you, Peter, what are your thoughts around around those issues of life and certainly the Liberal Party?
Yeah, thank you, Neil. Just to talk briefly about Renee Heath. I know a number of people over there in eastern Victoria, and some of those who belong to the Liberal Party over there and who have successfully voted Renee Heath into being a candidate. And the reports coming back from there are that Renee Heath is an absolutely lovely person who is really loved by the local people. She's very involved in local philanthropy and community, and she's also works really well with her 11 lower house candidates. And so the people over there in eastern Victoria are very, very grateful to have a beautiful candidate for the upper house like Renee. Just on the subject of the Liberal Party and life, this might sound terrible, but I kind of feel a bit sympathetic for towards Matthew Guy. And Christians are very, very disappointed by his poor stand on life issues. But I also think about the terrible position that he's been placed into, where he's trying to run a party where very few people are actually Christians. And so he's trying to represent the people in his own party. So he's actually caught between a rock and a hard place. And while I don't support his views on life or his public stand against some people who stand for life, I also want to kind of be a little bit sympathetic. And Neil, the exciting thing about the Liberal Nationals is, and I really support family first and what Lee's been saying, but we've got to remember that the Liberal Nationals also have quite a number of really strong Christians coming forward who may be elected. And so while Matthew Guy is a leader, and he certainly makes a lot of mistakes, we are looking at a whole lot of good Christian people being elected if we support the coalition.
And let me say that on the Australian Christian Lobby website, they have a link there for their victoriavotes.org.au site, and there is a list of all of the candidates, lower house and upper house, who will say that they are Christian. So for listeners who are interested in that, check out the Australian Christian Lobby website. Drawing our conversation to a close, let me ask for you gentlemen to give me your gut feeling as to how things will work out after the vote has been cast tomorrow. Perhaps not what your aspiration might be. Maybe Lee, you want to just focus on how you think the lower house will turn out. But you know, there's all sorts of scenarios. Perhaps there'll be a Labor-Greens coalition. Perhaps there'll be something significant happen and the Liberals will win power. What are your thoughts? Let me come to Lee Jones first. Your gut feeling about the outcome of tomorrow's election.
I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. There's been a huge number of people voting at pre-polls, and over 50% of Victorians have already voted. Now, traditional wisdom suggests that there's not generally good for a sitting government, because it implies a mood for change. That said, it's difficult to ignore the polling numbers, which have consistently shown a diminishing but a clear two-party preferred win for Labour. Were I to be a betting man, I would be looking at probably a hung parliament where there'll be a mixture of independents and some teals who will be and Greens, of course, who'll be there to try and negotiate a position. It's fairly clear the Greens would not be interested in going into coalition with the Liberals. It'd be very interesting to see the teals having to reveal their hand in terms of who they actually back, because we really see them as being effectively a front for the left. There are some good country independents who could come forward, and it'd be interesting to see if those people pick up on the mood for change. So my prediction would be a minority government. My desperate hope is that Dan himself is unseated, and that there's an opportunity for some sweeping change within the Labour Party, which would make them a lot less unattractive. And the ability to see some more reasoned policies coming through in our parliament.
Peter Stevens, your gut feel about the outcome tomorrow?
Yes, Neil, I think I would pretty much echo what Lee said. We've got to remember that this election is one, again, that preference whisperer Glenn Drury is heavily influencing. And his preferences that he, where parties pay him $55,000 and then have their preference organised by Glenn, kind of tend to go left. And so I absolutely believe that Glenn will, one, as he's promised, make sure that Labor is re-elected. As Lee said, I think with a minority government. But this preference whisperer, who some people are saying is more influential in Victorian politics than Dan Andrews, will, I believe, make sure that there is, as he's promised, a crossbench which supports Labor. So I'm kind of, as Martin Isle said, in a natural, thinking that things are not going to go successfully for us. But Victorian politics is a long-term project. And as I've said a few times, so many Christians coming into politics in Victoria. And while I kind of predict that this election, we're not going to have majority in the upper house or the lower house to favour us for conservative values, I believe that if we keep praying and we keep working and we keep encouraging people to get into politics, in 4 years or 8 years, I really believe that conservatives will again hold power in Victoria.
Well, it's one of those challenges, isn't it? And for Christians listening to a conversation like this, to be prayerful for our leaders, whether you like them or not. And for the two guests that we've had on this past 45 minutes, Peter Stevens from Family Voice Australia, he's the Victorian State Director, and Lee Jones is Family First Party lead candidate for the upper house. Let me just go through some of those resources for listeners and especially Victorians to access some of the resources that will give you insight into what the Christian commentators are talking about. The Christian Values Checklist I mentioned earlier, christianvalues.org.au. And as we've been talking to Peter Stevens, there is a Compare the Pair on the Family Voice Australia website, familyvoice.org.au, comparison between Dan Andrews and Matthew Guy. And there is the Australian Christian Lobby website, victoriavotes.org.au. There is some insight there into who the candidates with Christian faith are. There's commentary called The Truth About Daniel Andrews, and you can learn how the Victorian voting system works. So to the two of you, to Lee Jones, Family First Party candidate, and to Peter Stevens, Family Voice Australia, thank you so much for taking some time to share your thoughts and your heart with us today on 2020.
Thanks, Neil. It's nice to be with you.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.